Until the first two classes, we spoke about general principles of kashrut. The first class, which was quite a while ago already, we spoke about some of the philosophical underpinnings, some of the machshava behind kashrut. And in the second class, we discussed a general principle behind kashrut, which is how we can establish facts, who we can trust and how we can trust, and why we need hashgacha, and what types of hashgacha are necessary, and how we can, all that. Starting today, we're going to start going through individual mitzvot. I remind you something I made a statement about at the outset. One of the reasons why kashrut is so complicated is that there really is no such thing as kashrut. There's no one mitzvah called kashrut. What we call kashrut, we want to know whether I'm allowed to eat this food or not allowed to eat this food. There are many, 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 many different laws that we have to deal with that have nothing to do with one another, other than the fact that in some way or another they all impact on the permissibility of foods that we eat. And therefore we have to address these things separately. I'm going to try to do this in a little bit of a systematic manner. I'm going to start with plants and things that come from plants, and then later I move to animals and things that come from animals. And I'm going to try to do it in some kind of a logical progression, but you know, each week for the next number of weeks we'll be learning a different topic. And as you can see from the sheet I just gave you, the first topic we're going to discuss is the topic of Trumot Uma'asrot. This is something that you're not familiar with from Chutz Laretz. These mitzvot don't apply at all in Chutz Laretz unless you happen to get in Chutz Laretz, as occasionally happens, fruits or vegetables or other products that are imported from Eretz Yisrael, and then you need to be aware of these things. But in Chutz Laretz, if you're in a place where you can't get kosher food, right, if you're stuck in an airport someplace or whatever, the one thing that you're always able to buy is a banana. Right? That's the one thing, or an apple, or, you know. That's the one thing that, you know, a fresh fruit or vegetable is the one thing in Chutz Laretz, at least if it's the type of vegetable that you don't have to worry about checking for bugs, which is also a topic we'll talk about. So it's the one thing that you have no kashrus concerns with whatsoever. Here in Eretz Yisrael, it's the most difficult. It's often a lot easier to make sure that the meat is kosher than it is to make sure that the banana is kosher. Or at least it's often equally as problematic. The banana is often at least equally as problematic as the meat, and sometimes more so. So that's because there is a whole set of what we call mitzvot tatluyot ba'aretz. There is a whole set of laws that apply in Eretz Yisrael and only in Eretz Yisrael. Yes. Yeah, there's plenty more sheets. I was wondering why they wound up on my desk. Anyone else didn't get? Okay, here they are.
Oh, I didn't really give them out.
Yeah. Okay. Anybody else? Okay. All right. So, among the mitzvot hatzluyot ba'aretz, and these are not the only mitzvot hatzluyot ba'aretz, but among the mitzvot ba'aretz is the chovah of what's called trumot u'ma'asrot. At least if you have a Jew, a Jewish farmer, okay, if there's a non-Jew who owns land in Eretz Yisrael and grows produce, of which there are today many, Arab or other, so then that's a whole separate conversation, it's a machlokes, but let's talk about a Jewish farmer who lives in Eretz Yisrael. It could be a farmer, or it could be just a private person, right? I think I mentioned I have a lemon tree that we planted a number of years ago for the express purpose of being able to have some payroll to Eretz Yisrael and to be able to keep these mitzvot. So I'm very fond of my lemon tree because I'm able, through my lemon tree, to at least on some small level, to fulfill these mitzvot. The Torah describes a situation where a Jewish farmer harvests his crops, and before being allowed to eat the crops, he has to take off lahafrish hafrasha. He has to take off of the crops certain percentages for different purposes. And only after he does so is he allowed to eat the produce. In order to understand this, we're going to have to learn these laws on two levels. Because, sadly, most of the laws that we're about to learn about cannot be observed today the way the Torah intended them to be observed, for reasons that I will explain. And nevertheless, we are still obligated to relate to these laws in a certain way, but one which is going to be functionally different than the way it's supposed to happen. So we're going to have today's shiur on two levels, or we're going to go through this stuff twice. First, we're going to discuss the way these laws are supposed to be kept. The way they used to be kept when we had a Beit HaMikdash and we had the ability to become Tahor and we knew who the Kohanim were and the Levim were, etc., with certainty. So first we're going to learn the way those laws were kept back in those days and also will be kept, Bezrat Hashem b'mehera b'yameinu, when that once again is the situation. So that'll be the first half of the class today. And after that we'll say, okay, right now, unfortunately, that's not the case. So how do we do it nowadays? Okay? So let's start with the way things are supposed to happen, and let's start with the Psukim in the Torah. If you look at the first sheet, I gave you three sheets. If you look at the first sheet, you will see five sets of Psukim. These five sets of Psukim discuss the five types of Hafrasha, the five types of separations, that you have to, things that need to be removed from the produce before you're allowed to eat it. You know what? Even before we get to these psukim, turn to the second page for a minute. The halacha is that not everything that grows in Eretz Yisrael requires these matanot, these gifts, to be taken off of them for the Kohanim and the Levim, etc. Only things that are called, and you see there a term, tevel. Only things that are called tevel need to be separated. Need these hafrashot. What defines something as tevel? So first of all, I give you six requirements there. First of all, it has to be something that grew in Eretz Yisrael. Now, that itself is a little bit complicated, what that means. Thank you, Dula. So, what exactly we mean by Eretz Yisrael is surprisingly complicated. You might be saying to yourself, what's complicated about Eretz Yisrael? We know exactly where Eretz Yisrael is. Well, sort of. We know that Yerushalayim is in Eretz Yisrael, and we know that Brooklyn isn't, but there are some people maybe didn't figure that out yet, but Brooklyn actually isn't. But the exact boundaries of what is, the boundaries of the modern state of Israel do not necessarily correspond with the halakhic boundaries of Eretz Israel. There may be areas that are today outside of the borders. There may be areas that are today outside the borders of Medinat Israel, which perhaps are considered Eretz Israel halakhically. There may be places inside the borders of Medinat Israel that perhaps are not considered to be Eretz Israel halakhically. And that's a topic that I'm not going to deal with today. There are definitely questions about this, and perhaps maybe we'll, sometimes I've given a shiur about this in Eilat. Maybe we'll do it in Eilat this year. Maybe we'll do it at some other point. But that's a whole topic in its own right. So I'm not going to get into that now. There definitely are certain areas of the country, particularly in the south of the country, not even only as far as Eilat, but even further north, there are places where there are certain questions, and that's a separate conversation. But for now, let's just say Eretz Yisrael. So that's the first thing. If the product in question grew in Chutz La'aretz, whatever that's defined as, so then these laws don't apply. That's number one. Number two, I wrote it has to be Shayach LeYehudi. First of all, if a Goy owns it, then there's a whole question if it's Chayev. And number two, if nobody owns it, if it's Hefker. Okay, so for example, if you're on a Tiul, and you're hiking through a forest, and you get to a wild bush with some berries or stuff like that, first of all, make sure they're not poisonous. But assuming that you know that they're safe to eat, and assuming that they don't have bugs in them or anything of that nature, since they're hefker, since nobody owns them, you can simply pick it right off the tree and eat it. There's absolutely no problem. You could take it home with you and eat it at home. If it grew in a state of hefker, if nobody owns it, then there's no chiyuv of trumot to ma'asrot either. The Torah actually spoke only about certain types of products. The Torah spoke about dagan, tirosh, v'yitzar. Anyone know what those words mean? Dagan?
Grains.
Grains, okay, which are basically the five species of grains. Tirosh?
Wine.
And yitzar?
Another type of grain.
Not a grain. Yitzar is olive oil.
Oh.
Okay? So in the Torah, only grain and wine and olives, or olive oil, is what's chayav in these mitzvot. But midrabanan, it extends to all grains, not only the five species, and also all fruits, and also all vegetables. But even then, it's not necessarily chayav in trumot u'masorot. It's not necessarily tevel. Even if I have a fruit or a vegetable or a grain that grows in land that's owned by a Jew in Eretz Israel, so it's not hefker, it's not a goyiz, it is in Eretz Israel, it is one of these types of foods, it's still not necessarily tevel. For example, if you have an orchard or a vineyard, and you're out working in the vineyard, or you're out strolling through the vineyard, in your own vineyard, you can pick a grape off the vineyard and just eat it, with a bracha. But you don't have to take trumot u'masorot from it. It's not tevel. Why not? Because in order to become tevel, you need the following three steps still have to happen. First of all, it has to be what's called ma'achal adam. If you eat a fruit or vegetable that's not fully ripe, it's not ready to be picked yet, and you pick it off the tree anyway or out of the ground anyway, and you eat it before it's really ready to be eaten, there's no problem of tevel there. Only once it's reached a certain stage of development, and each type of plant has its own definitions. Each type of fruit, each type of vegetable, each type of grain has very specific definitions that the halacha gives, and these are detailed in the Mishnayot in Seder Zrayim and later on in the Rishonim to describe exactly what, how you know when each product has reached what's called onat ha-masrot. And maybe just, let me just finish these two things, and then I'll take questions. So if you pick it before it's ready, then there's no din of tevel. Even if you pick it when it is ready, as I said, if you pick it and eat it in the field, what's called achilat arai, just random snacking while you're out working in the field or something like that, it's fine. You're allowed to do that. There's no chiyuv of trumot u'masorot. It's not tevel yet. Only when you have the final two steps, what's called gemar melacha and hachnasa labayit. Gemar melacha means the things are picked off the trees or harvested from the ground, and every type of thing, whether it's grapes, whether it's apples, whether it's cucumbers, whether it's stalks of wheat, they're always, when they're harvested by a farmer, I'm not talking about one thing off a tree, when they're harvested by a farmer, they're always put together in some kind of package or some kind of bundle, some type of basket, something that puts them into a standard size, and that you know that, you know, in America they used to talk about, I think, a bushel of apples. That's a type, that's a term. The Torah speaks about an omer, which is a certain size of a bundle of wheat. There are standard sizes and packaging that you do to something by which you then can sell them, or which you put them in your own storehouse and you would use them yourself. That process is called gemar melacha. So now I have, let's say, a basket of apples or a bundle of wheat or something like that. Now I have a finished product that's no longer a plant growing on a tree or a crop growing in a field. It's now a harvested and packaged product that's ready to be used. And it's still not tevel. I could still stick my hand into that basket, pull out one apple in the field and eat it. It only becomes tevel when it goes through its final step of what's called kviut lema'aser, which the standard procedure for that is what's called ri'iyat p'nei habayit. If I'm the farmer and I'm taking it into my house for myself, when I take it out of the field and bring it into the house, when I cross the threshold of the door into the house, at that moment it becomes tevel. Midrabanan, there are six other things that can also accomplish kviyut lemaaser, and those are, you see I wrote them for you on the sheet, chatzer, mekach, esh, melach, truma, v'shabbat. Chatzer means if I bring it not into my house but into a courtyard, so midrabanan, that also counts. Mekach means if I sell it. Okay, I'm out there in the field of packaging and some guy drives by in a truck and says, hey, you know, I want some apples. And I say, okay, you know, for X amount of money, I'll sell you 2 bushels of apples. And I sell it, he takes it, buys it from me and puts it into his truck and drives off.
He's chayav to do it.
Now it's tevel and he's chayav to do it, right. Whoever has it is now chayav to do it. Eish is if I cook it. Right, we're going to go roast potatoes in the field. So now that's not achilat arai anymore, and it has to be, it's tevel. Melach, if you salt it, which often accomplishes something similar to cooking it. Truma, if you separate truma, which we'll see is the first of the hafrashot, then it automatically becomes tevel, and you have to do all the others also. Even though you tevel means that it's usher to eat it until you take off all the things you have to take off. Okay? And last thing is Shabbat. If you eat it out in the field during the week, it's fine. But if you go out into the field on Shabbat and eat it there, the fact that it's Shabbat, anything you eat on Shabbat is a mitzvah of Oneg Shabbat that transforms everything you're doing into a different category, and it then becomes teva. Okay, so we're going to assume that I now have teva. Okay, I have fruits, vegetables, grains that grew in the field or on land owned by a Jew in Eretz Yisrael and went through this whole process, and it's now tevel. That means it's asur to eat the fruits or the vegetables or the grain or anything made from them. If it's grapes and you made wine from it, then the wine is tevel. If it's wheat and you make bread from it, then the bread is tevel and you're not allowed to eat it. Therefore, yes?
Is that on Shabbat? Because of Shabbat, it's on Shabbat, that is why it becomes tevel?
Then?
But you said regardless, if it's oil, if it's olive oil, wine, or grain, will be tevel.
No, I said those things will become tevel if they go through gmar malacha and kviut lema'aser. They're brought into the house. But then
if you just find olive oil on the street and you want to use it.
Well, it depends. Olive oil on the street might have already been tevel. Don't talk about olive oil on the street. Talk about if I picked an olive.
Range. I don't know. So an olive.
If I picked an olive off a tree in the field, I could eat the olive. If I squeezed the oil out of the olive right there in the field, I could eat the oil too.
And you don't have to, you can't
get trim off. You don't have to. You don't have to, that's the point.
So what's the minimum size?
Once it's not a matter of size. Once it becomes tevel, then you have to take truma and maser from it. Yes, Reva.
So do Raita, you don't have to take truma from olives or grapes that aren't becoming wine or oil?
No, I believe that olives and grapes would still be chayav min ha-Torah.
So why is it referred to as olive oil and wine?
Because you'll see that this has ramifications in a number of areas of halacha. Olives and grapes are grown primarily for the wine and the oil, not for the fruit itself.
Right. But
okay, so an olive is referred to as oil, even when it's still an olive. Okay, yes.
So you need these six things.
That has ramifications, by the way, in Hilchos Brachos and Hilchos Shabbos and other things. Yes.
You need six things to make it tevel.
You need any one of those six things will make. Oh, those six steps. Yes.
The six steps.
Yes.
But then the things that are derabanan. Any one of those without the best of
it. No, the derabanan things are instead of number six, instead of riyat pnei abayah. Okay, so I have tevel. I have tevel. Let's say I have a basket of apples that are tevel, and I want to go ahead and be allowed to eat these apples. What do I have to do? So let's go back to the first page and let's first read the Torah. And we'll see that there are five different matanot that have to be taken, five different hafrashot. They don't all have to be done each year, as we will see. But first, let's go through. Truma Gedola, that's the first one. We have psukim both in Bamidbar and in Dvarim that tell us, Kol Cheleb Yitar v'Kol Cheleb Tirosh v'Dagan. So you see there the yitar, the tirosh, and the dagan. Reishitam, the first of them, asher yitnu l'ashem l'cha netatim, that pasuk is speaking to Kohanim. So this tells us that the first hafrasha that has to come off these things is given to Hashem, and Hashem then gives it to the Kohanim. And the pasukim and dvarim elaborate further, lo yeh l'kohanim halevim kol shevet levi chelek v'nachalayim Yisrael, ishei Hashem v'nachalatan yocheilun. We know that the Kohanim and the Levim don't have a nachala. The rest of the Shvatim got nachalot where they could grow their own food. The Kohanim and Levim got cities, but they can't really grow so much food. But what's their food? Their food is nachalat Hashem. The nachala lo yelo b'ker v'chab, Hashem hu nachalato, kasher dibilo. How does that work? It's very nice that God is his nachala, but he can't eat God's food. But it turns out he can. How does that work? V'zeh yeh mishpat ha-Kohanim me'et ha'am, מאת זובחי הזבח, עם שור עם שא, ונתן לכהן הזרוע והלחיים והקיבה. That's part of animals of the korban that's given to the Kohen. So one of the things that the Kohen gets is that during the weeks that he's working in the Beit HaMikdash, every time people bring certain types of korbanot, he gets parts of those animals to eat. Gets to eat a lot of meat when he's in the Beit HaMikdash. That's not what we're concerned with here. What we're concerned with here is the next pasuk, Reshit degancha tiroshcha v'yitzarecha, and also Reshit geiz tzoncha, that's also something else, that's the shearing of the wool off the sheep, he gets part of that also, titen lo. So you see here that the Torah says that a Kohen gets the Reshit, the first hafrasha that comes off of the product, and we're going to call that Truma Gidola. Truma Gidola, the first thing I have to do, therefore, is I'm going to have to take off from my produce, Truma Gedola. That's going to be given to a Kohen. But you see here that the Torah describes it not as something that's given directly to the Kohen. It describes it as something that's given to Hashem, and Hashem gives it to the Kohen. What that means in halakhic terminology is that Truma is Kadosh. It's holy. What that means is the following. If I have Truma, Truma Gedola in this case, we'll see that there's another type of Truma as well, Truma Gedola, that I separated out from my apples. First of all, it doesn't belong to me anymore. It belongs to a Kohen. If I would eat it, I'd be stealing. But that's not the only thing about it. It's holy. And therefore, because it's holy, first of all, the only person who's allowed to eat it is a Kohen, or his wife and children.
Even today?
We'll get to today. I told you. First, we're talking about the way it's supposed to be, and then we'll talk about today. The only one who's allowed to eat it is a Kohen, and the Kohen has to eat it b'tahara. He has to be tahor. And the food has to be tahor. If the truma becomes tmeah, or if the Kohen himself becomes tameh, then he cannot eat it. If he becomes tameh, he can wait until he can become tahor again, and then eat it. If the truma becomes tahora, tmeah, it cannot be purified, and it would have to be burnt. So truma can only be eaten by a Kohen, which means I give it to the Kohen. If you're not a Kohen, and you're invited to a Kohen's house, he can't serve you truma. You're not allowed to eat it. Even if he gives it to you, you're not allowed to eat it. In other words, it's not only in dine mamunot, it's not only financially the property of the Kohen, it also has kedusha, and therefore, if you're not a Kohen, you're not allowed to eat it. And even the Kohen is only allowed to eat it in certain ways. Yes?
When you said the Kohen has to be tahor, is that by the wife?
Anyone. It can be eaten by the wife of a Kohen can eat truma, but only if she's tahora. If she's not Torah, she can't. If she's in Nida, for example, then she can't eat truma right now. So then she'll have to eat other food that the Kohen has. They can get other food. There are other ways they can get food, sure. But she can't eat truma right now. Or if he's Tameh, he could be Tameh for many reasons. Then he can't eat truma right now. Yes.
Don't get this one?
No, this goes to the Kohanim. Okay? How much do I have to take off for truma gedola? It doesn't say. It doesn't say. It just says Reshit, the beginning. Chazal understood that min haTorah there is no shiur, there is no amount. You could take off what's called a mashahu, even the smallest amount, and that would satisfy the requirement of truma, gedola. However, midrabanan, the rabbis gave it a shiur. They didn't want the kohanim to get like little crumbs of nothing. So the rabbis gave a shiur, but it's not an exact shiur. The rabbi said, midah beinonit, right? An average person gives 1/50, which is 2%. That's the average. Ayin tova, but someone who's generous, someone who's, wants to give a little more, will give 1/40. I think that's 2.5%, right? And ayin ra'a, someone who's stingy, cheapskate, can give 1/60. In other words, it's a minimum of 1/60 up to 1/40, or an average of 1/50. That's the range of Truma Gedola. Min haTorah, it's a mashu, midrabanan, you have to give that much. Okay? In a minute, we'll give an example on the board about this, but let's just first go through the rest. Yes?
Reshit meaning the first fruits, like Bikurim?
No, it's not Bikurim. Bikurim is something else. This is not Bikurim. Out of every pile of Tevel, or every package of Tevel, wherever it is, the first thing you take off has to be Truma Gedola. So, I take Truma Gedola off, and I set it aside, to be given to a Kohen. I don't necessarily have to give it to the Kohen right away. If there's no Kohen here, I can put it aside, mark it as Truma, and next time I see a Kohen, I can give it to him. But I have to physically separate it from the rest, and I have to designate it as Truma. Yes?
So like anytime you take like a bushel of apples, let's say you have to take off an apple, it's not just like...
I didn't say an apple. You have to take one, let's say 1/50 of the total amount.
Like from every bushel of them. It's like if you have like 10...
Well, you could do it all at the same time. You could harvest your entire orchard
and then take one.
And then take, right, that's the way it was intended to be done. But if you're doing it in pieces, then you have to do it. As soon as you have tevel, and this tevel needs to have these hafrashot. So you have to take the tevel and take off, let's say, 1/50 of it for truma gedola. What?
How could it be measured?
What do you mean, how could it be measured? Measure it.
Can take it from one.
Well, you can estimate, but it's got to be at least the minimum amount.
So if you said you cook something in the field and it becomes tevel, why does the Kohen later cook potato from
Leib
Asbi? That's just like, he's not going to eat it. It's gross.
Okay.
How does that apply?
Even if it's... So, listen. It's tevel, and you're not allowed to eat it until you take the truma off. Now you take the truma off, you're obligated to get it to a Kohen. If before you're able to get it to a Kohen, it spoils, then it's spoiled. But you're not allowed to eat. And we're going to see that today we're not able to give it to a Kohen for various reasons, and we still have to take it off because the food is tevel until we take it off. Okay? Then, let me just go a little further, okay? Now, after I took off Truma Gadola, it's still tevel. Why? Because there's more hafreshot that have to be taken off. The next thing I have to take off is what's called Ma'aser Rishon. Ma'aser, from the word, we already know that, unlike Truma, this has an exact measurement. How much? Ma'aser, 1/10, right? V'livnei Levi, hinei natati kol ma'aser b'Yisrael enachala, chelech avodatam asher heim ovzim et avodat olam oed. It's their payment, the Levi, and they work in the Olam Oed, they work in the Beit HaMikdash, and they work for Hashem in general, and their payment is ma'aser. And it tells us, okay, so this is Ma'aser Rishon, that you have to take off from the things and give it to the Levi. So now I gave Truma Gadola to a Kohen, that was like 1/50th. A tenth of what's left. A tenth of what's remains after the Truma was taken off. And that Ma'aser has to go to a Levi. The Levi's clearly getting a lot more than the Kohen gets, right? So he gets Ma'aser Rishon. But when the Levi gets the Ma'aser Rishon, it's tevel for him. Because the Levi now has an obligation. What does he have to do? Next Pesukim, which by the way, these Pesukim are the next, they follow directly in the Torah after the ones we just read. By the Be'er Hashem Moshe Nimor, Ve'el ha-Leviim tedaber, v'emarta alehem, ki tikhu me'et b'nei Yisrael ta ma'aser, asher natati lachem, me'itam b'nachalatchem. When you get the Ma'aser that I commanded b'nei Yisrael to give you, V'harei motem mimenu trumat Hashem ma'aser mina ma'aser.
Is this number two?
This is number three. I gave Truma Gadola to a Kohen. I gave Ma'aser Rishon to a Levi. The Levi then takes the Ma'aser Rishon that I gave him, and before he's allowed to eat it, he has to take ma'aser mina ma'aser. He has to take 1/10 of the tenth I gave him, and that becomes truma. It's called trumat Hashem. Chazal referred to this ma'aser mina ma'aser. Chazal referred to it as trumat ma'aser. And as you'll see, let's read on. V'nechshav lachem, these psukim are talking to the Levi. V'nechshav lachem trumatchem. This truma is considered for you kidagan min hagoren v'chamleya min hayekev. This is, you didn't get it from the field. You didn't get it from the goren, the threshing floor, the yekev, the wine press. You got it from a farmer who himself harvested and processed it, and he gave it to you. But you have to treat this is basically your crops. You're a Levi. You also have a harvest. Your harvest is the maaser people give you. You have to take truma from that. And therefore, what Chazal understood from these psukim is that trumat maaser has the same dinim as truma gedola. It goes to the Kohen. Right, exactly. So the trumat maaser that the Levi separates from his maaser also has to be given to a Kohen, also can only be eaten by a Kohen or his wife or children, or he can even feed it to his animals, by the way. And also only b'tahara. Exactly the same. There's no difference in halacha. Once it becomes truma gedola or truma maaser, it's truma and there's no difference between them. Okay, so now the Kohen has his truma, the lady has his maaser, which he has taken truma maaser from. At this point, the Kohen can eat his thing, the Levi can eat his thing. And by the way, the maaser that the Levi has, after he takes off Trumat Maaser, unlike what the Kohen got, the maaser that the Levi has is not holy. It's what we call chulin.
After he
So
he can't eat anything.
No,
he
no,
also
no.
Needs
I gave him maaser. When I gave it to him, it was tevel. Because he has to take Trumat Maaser.
And give it to the Kohen.
He does that. Then the rest of what's left by him, the other 90%, is now permissible. Okay?
So it's tamer.
No, I said it's chulin. Chulin means it's not holy.
Because No.
I didn't say it's tamer. I said it's not holy. Because it's not holy, unlike truma, you don't have to be a Levi to eat maaser. It belongs to the Levi, and therefore if someone else takes it without permission, they're stealing. But for example, unlike a Kohen, a Levi can invite you to his house and feed you maaser and there's no problem eating it. The Levi can sell the maaser. The Levi can give it away. And also, Corinne, the maaser can be eaten bitum'ah. If the maaser is tameh, or if the Levi is tameh, he can eat it because there's no holiness to it. Meaning, Maaser Rishon is a financial thing. I have to give him some of my crops, that becomes his. He takes off the truma and the rest becomes his. But it has no kedusha. Truma, however, is both a financial thing and a kedusha thing. So truma has laws, only a kohen can eat it, only b'tahara. Maaser Rishon belongs to the Levi and that's it. The Levi can do with it what he wants.
It's not kedush.
Truma maaser is truma.
So it's kadosh.
And that's kadosh. But the maaser that remains is not kadosh.
I have to give it to the kohen.
Tess.
The food that the Levi's getting, the 1/10, right, from the 1/50th, when he's giving his truma, right, to the kohen again, he has to give 1/50th of what?
No, he gives 1/10. Maaser, mina maaser. Truma gedola has no shiur, mina Torah, midrabanan, it's 1/40th, 1/50th, 1/60th. But Trumat Maaser, the Torah gave it a shear. It's Maaser Mina Maaser. In a minute, let me just go through the rest, because then I'll give you an example, and we'll understand us all much better. Okay, maybe just hold your question for a minute. Let me just go through the rest. Okay. So now the Kohen can eat his Truma, the lady can eat his Maaser, or can give it away or whatever, but the rest of the stuff that I have is still Tevel, because I have one more Hafrasha I need to make. And the Hafrasha I need to make depends what year it is. In most cases, I'm going to have to take Maaser Sheni. What's Maaser Sheni? Dvarim Yudalid. Aser ta aser. Et kol tvuat zarecha hayotze hasadeh shana shana. Ve'achalta lefnei Hashem Elokecha b'makom asher yivchar. What do I do with Maaser Sheni? It's called Maaser Sheni because after I've taken Maaser Rishon, I have to take Maaser again. Now this Maaser is 1/10 of what's left. After I've already taken, so Maaser Sheni is going to be slightly less than Maaser Rishon because it's 1/10 of what is remains. But what do I do with it? V'achalta lifnei Hashem Elokecha b'makom asher yivchar. I do something very strange with Maaser Sheni. I don't give it to anybody. I bring it to Yerushalayim, and what do I do with it? You eat it there yourself. B'tahara. Maaser Sheni can only be eaten b'tahara. And it can also be eaten, by the way, when there's a Beit HaMikdash standing, because it says Lifnei Hashem. And we learn from that and from another Pasuk that means only when there's a Beit HaMikdash, which means we're not going to be able right now to eat Maaser Sheni, plus the fact that we're Tamei, we're not going to be able to eat Maaser Sheni. But in theory, that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to take it to Yerushalayim and eat it in Yerushalayim.
How long does that take? How long does that take? What if someone got a really big harvest?
So what if it takes too long? What if there's too much to carry? The Torah addresses that. In the next Pasuk, V'chi, or two psukim later, V'chi yirbem imcha haderech, Riva. If it's too far away, ki lo tuchal seito, Baruch Hashem. You live up in the Golan, you have a huge apple orchard, and Baruch Hashem, you have, you know, acres and acres, and you have huge amounts of apples, and 1/10, or even, that's actually 9% of all the apples, you're going to have to hire a fleet of trucks to drive them all down to Yerushalayim, and then you have to sit there eating apples for the next 4 months. So the Torah says, okay, I'll give you another solution. If that can't happen, ki yirchak mimcha hamakom shivcha Hashem Elokecha l'shum shmo sham, ki yivarechecha Hashem Elokecha. So what can you do? V'natata b'kasef. You can take the Maaser Sheni, and you can transfer the Kedusha from the Maaser Sheni to money. You can take a pile of money. How much money? In theory, the rabbis learned it's supposed to be. Well, there's two ways you can do this. You can take the apples that are Maaser Sheni, and you can sell them to somebody. So when I sell the apples to somebody, the person who buys them gets the apples and pays me the money. As the transaction takes place, the Kedusha transfers from the apples to the money. So the person who bought them now has apples that are chulin. He doesn't have to take them to Yerushalayim. He can eat them wherever. But now the money has Kedusha. Or, so in that case, it's being sold for its fair value. The other possibility is if I don't have a customer, I can do it myself. I can take an amount of money and I can declare that I'm using this money lifdot, to do pidyon, to redeem the maaser, and I can transfer them kedusha. But if you do that, you're supposed to add what's called a chomesh. A chomesh is how much? It's a fifth, which is actually a fourth. Don't ask me to explain why now, I don't have time. So for example, if I have 100 shekels worth of apples that are maaser sheni and I want to be poda them, I can either sell them for 100 shekels, or I can do it myself. I can take out of my pocket money, but then I have to take not 100, but 125 shekels, because the 25 is chomesh. And then I can declare the kedusha should transfer from the apples to the money. Okay, and then the apples I didn't sell it to anybody, but now I can eat the apples right here, and the money has Kedusha. And what do I do with the money? So the Torah continues, V'natata b'kasef, v'tzarta ha'kesef b'yadecha, you should gather up the money in your hands, v'halachta, and go, el makom she'yivchar Hashem elokecha bo, v'natata ha'kesef b'chol asher ta'aveh nafshecha, b'bakar u'vatzon u'vayayin u'vashechar. I don't have to go to Yerushalayim and buy apples. Instead, I can go to the fanciest restaurant in town and buy a really good steak and really expensive wine, bakar, vatzon, yayin, v'shechar. And I can buy, so what I do is I take the money that has Kedusha, I don't need a fleet of trucks, I can just put it in my pocket, go to Yerushalayim. When I get to Yerushalayim, I take this money and I buy food in Yerushalayim with the money. Whatever food I buy with the money, the Kedusha that started in the apples and transferred onto the money, now gets transferred again to the apple, to whatever I buy, the steak, right? So now the money again becomes unholy. The money can now be used for anything. But now the steak that I bought has Kedushat Maaser Sheni, and the steak can now only be eaten only in Yerushalayim and only B'Tahara. So those are the two options with Maaser Sheni back in time of the Beit HaMikdash. Once I've separated, I'll take all questions
with
in a minute.
The food you buy with the money has to
Let's do this. Let's do this. I'm holding questions now. Let me finish this piece. I'll give you an example on the board, and then I'll take all questions on this piece, and then I'll go to the second piece. I just have to keep my eye on the clock. Okay? I took off Truma Gedola, gave it to the Kohen. Maaser Rishon, gave it to Levi. He took off Truma Maaser. Then I took off Maaser Sheni. At that point, I'm done. And by the way, again, I didn't necessarily give the Truma to the Kohen yet, the Maaser Rishon to the Levi yet. The Maaser Sheni, I certainly haven't taken to Yerushalayim yet. It's all sitting here. But once I have separated out Truma, Maaser Rishon, Maaser Sheni, then what's left, I can now eat. What's left is now chulin. Except for one more thing. Maaser Ani. What's Maaser Ani? Miktzei shalosh shanim, at the end of 3 years, totzi et kol ma'asar tvuatcha bashana hahi, all the maaser that you take in that year, the third year, you should take it, v'hinachta b'sharecha. And don't take it to Yerushalayim. Leave it in your gates, that means in your local towns. And what happens to it? Uvaha Levi, v'hager, I'm skipping to the underlying pasuk, v'hager v'hayatom v'ha'almana asher b'sharecha, v'achlu v'saveyu. The way the rabbis understood these pasukim is the following. This happens in the third year. What do you mean the third year? There's a cycle of 7 years. Every seventh year is what? Shemitah. We're not talking about Shemitah here. But in a Shemitah year, everything's different. In the Shemitah year, all the fruits and vegetables and whatever grows in Eretz Yisrael is hefker. Anybody's allowed to go into anyone else's field and take whatever grows. You're not allowed to work the land either, but whatever grows on its own, at least Minat Torah, anyone's allowed to come in and take. And therefore, there's no Trumo to Masrot, because everything's hefker. Right? The same way today you can go out into a forest and pick something and eat it. In Shemitah, you can walk into anybody's vineyard, pick the fruit and eat it. It has Kedushat Shvi'it. That's a whole separate set of laws, but there's no dinim of Trumot to Masrot. Trumot to Masrot exists there for only 6 out of 7 years. And those 6 out of 7 years are divided into 2 sets of 3. So the first year and the second year, it's Maaser Sheni. The third year, you take the Maaser Sheni, and instead of it being Maaser Sheni, where it has to be taken to Yerushalayim, instead you're supposed to leave it in your cities and it's supposed to be given to the Leviv, the Ger, the Yatom, the Almana. What do those people have in common? Those people are all vulnerable and poor. So this is what's called Maaser Ani. So in the third year, you don't give Maaser Sheni, instead you give Maaser Ani. You take the same amount, the same Maaser, but it doesn't get Kedusha, you don't have to take it to Yerushalayim, instead, and you don't get to keep it yourself. Instead, you have to give it to a poor person. And then the fifth and the sixth year again is Maaser Sheni. The fourth and the fifth year again is Maaser Sheni. And the sixth year is Maaser Ani again. Yes?
Is it the senior agron, or was it like if someone starts like planting stuff?
No, it's not. This doesn't go per tree or anything like that. That's Orla. We'll get to that. That's next week's class.
No, I was going to say, did everyone have like the same third year?
For sure. Yeah. There's a Shemitah year. Why are you saying did? It's true now too. This is Shnat Tavshin Ayin Gimel. Okay, the last Shemitah was Tavshin Samachet. Okay, so Tavshin Samachet was the first year. Tavshin Ayin was the second year. Tavshin Ayin Aleph was a Maaser Ani year. Tavshin Ayin Bet and Tavshin Ayin Gimel, this is now the fifth year. This is a Maaser Sheni year. Next year, Tavshin Ayin Dalet is going to be a Maser Ani year. And Tavshin Ayin Hay will be the next Shemitah year. 2 years from now, it's going to be Shemitah. Okay?
We have to eat in your
shalom. No, Maser Ani, it says Bisharecha. Okay? Turn the page in this little table. Let's just review everything we've said, and I'll show you how it works now. Let's imagine that I have a bushel of apples, a basket of apples, and in my basket of apples, there are exactly 102 apples. There's a reason I chose this number, you'll see. There are exactly 102 apples, and let's assume the apples are all the same size, so that percentage-wise, 10 apples will be exactly, or whatever. Whatever percentage 10 is out of 102. Okay? These 102 apples are tevel. I want to be allowed to eat them.
Is this now?
No, not now. This is still back in the day and in the future. Okay? So what do I have to do? The first thing I have to separate is going to be what? Truma Gedola. We're going to do 1/40th, 1/50th, 1/60th. Let's be average. Let's do 1/50th. That's about 2 apples, roughly speaking. So I'm going to take 2 apples. And that's going to go to who? To the Kohen. And it has it's Kadosh. Okay? Truma. How many apples am I now left with?
100
apples. The next thing I'm going to take is what? Maaser Rishon. How much is that?
10.
See, yeah, there's a reason I started with 102. We're going to make this easy. Maaser, I'm going to give 10 apples. And who does that go to? The Levi. But wait a second. What's the Levi going to do? He's going to now take, we're going to make this 2 aleph, right? He's going to now take ma'aser, trumat ma'aser,
which is a tenth of
10. So how much is that?
One.
And he's going to give that to the Kohen, leaving him with 9. And those are going to be chulin. Okay? So now the Kohen has 3 apples that are holy. The Levi has 9 apples that are not holy. Mm-hmm. And I have how many? I have 90 apples left that are still tevel. Again, I started with 102. I gave the Kohen 2 of them for Truma Gedola. Right? So now the Kohen had 2 holy apples. And I had 100 of tevel. I then took Maaser, which was 10 of those, leaving me with 90. I gave the 10 to the Levi as Maaser Rishon. But when the Levi got his Maaser Rishon, they were still tevel. So what did he do? He took Maaser Mina Maaser. He took a tenth of his tenth, which was 1, and he made that Trumat Maaser. He gave that to the Kohen too. It doesn't have to be the same Kohen, of course, but let's assume it was. So now the Kohen has a total of 3 apples that are all Truma. 2 of them he got directly from me as Truma Gedola. 1 of them he got from the Levi as Trumat Maaser, but there's no difference between them. All 3 of those apples are holy and have to be treated with the laws of Truma. The lady's left with 9 apples. His 9 apples are now permissible. They're chulin. They have no kedusha. He can do whatever he wants with them. I have 90 left from my original 102, but these 90 are still tevel. One more minute. I now have to take what?
Either
maaser sheni or maaser ani. It depends on the year. If it's shana 1, 2, 4, or 5, then it's going to be maaser sheni, and then. How many apples are these going to be?
9.
Maaser Rishon was 10, but these are going to be 9, leaving a total of 81 up here. These 9, if it's years 1, 2, 4, or 5, it's Maaser Sheni. They're Kadosh. They have to go to Yerushalayim, or I have to transfer the Kedusha to money and then take the money to Yerushalayim. If it's the years 3 or 6, then it's Maaser Ani, in which case it goes to a poor person, and it's Chulin. Okay? So now, when we're all done, the Kohen has 3 apples that are holy. The Levi has 9 apples left that are chulin. There's 9 apples that are either maaser sheni and have kedusha, or went to a poor person and don't have kedusha, leaving me now with 81 apples from my original 102 that are chulin. I can do now I can eat these apples, I can sell these apples, I can do whatever I want with them. That is the process of Trumot and Maasrot, as it's supposed to happen, Bizman HaMikdash. I will now take a few questions, and then in the few minutes we have left, I'll tell you how things are different nowadays. Yes, Riva.
How did people know which Kohen are they giving it to? Like,
you could choose. You have the right to choose which one you want to give it to.
So didn't some people get like a lot? And some
probably. Probably the Kohanim and Levim that actually did their job and went out and taught people well would be more likely to get stuff.
But
and maybe that's the point.
Like, be more likable so that they get more.
Perhaps. Their job is to teach Torah.
Like,
What's there to get corrupted? If they their job is no, but their job is to make themselves available to the people. They're not judges. They're not being bought off. They're not dayanim. Right? Okay. Yes.
Can you explain again why you would want to transfer the kedusha if you're going to have to add like,
because it's still difficult to carry all this stuff to Yerushalayim, and when I'm adding to it, I'm not losing that money.
Oh, it's just for convenience.
Sure. I don't want to take all these apples from the Golan. I'd rather take money and go to Yerushalayim and have a vacation.
Is that
the diavad? Totally allowed to do that. Maaser Sheni forces you to have a vacation in Yerushalayim. That's exactly what it's for. Spiritual vacation. Time to hang out in Yerushalayim in the shadow of the Beit HaMikdash. I only have a few minutes, so quickly, Ricky.
Maaser Sheni is Maaser Rishon
Zman. Correct. The Maaser Ani is not either. Correct.
Our Niyam also has to give the Maaser Ani.
Yes. A Levi has to separate Maaser Rishon, but then he can keep it. An Ani has to separate Maaser Ani,
okay.
But then he still has to separate it.
Oh, but then he can keep it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now. What's different with Zman? I just have to finish.
Quick, the 81 is what?
Chulin. No, the 81 is what's left from the original. Until this, it was Tevel. When I get to the 81, it's now permissible.
Why are you talking about Maaser Sheni? You said Terumah
Maaser
is 2A, and the next step
is... Maaser Sheni is 9 apples.
Oh, I didn't see the number 3.
Okay,
sorry.
Now, what's different with Zman Hazeh? Several things are different with Zman Hazeh. First of all, there's no Beit HaMikdash. Sadly, so right now you're not allowed to eat Maaser Sheni, even if you could. Number two, we're Tamei. The Kohanim are Tamei, everyone's Tamei. And therefore, even if I knew exactly who a Kohen was, he couldn't eat Truma. And we can't eat the Maaser Sheni, and we can't do anything about the Truma. We can remove certain types of Truma, we can go to the mikveh and get certain types of Tahara, but Tumat Mate, anyone who's ever been in a room with a dead person, i.e. at a funeral, anyone who's ever been to a cemetery, anyone who's ever touched someone who's been in a funeral at a cemetery at even once in their life. In other words, all of us are Tmei Mate, and until we have a Parah Aduma, we can't do anything about that. So we cannot do that. On top of that, there's another factor. We don't really know who the Kohanim and Leviim are. I'll tell you I'm a Levi. Rabbi Katz will tell you he's a Kohen. And the reason I'll tell you I'm a Levi is that my father told me he was a Levi. Is a Levi. And he said that because his father told him that he was a Levi. And that was the tradition passed down from his father. And the same thing with Kohanim. But there's been thousands of years of Galut. And we've been kicked around the world and suffered all kinds of different things. And we don't really know. I have a story that I wish I could tell. I don't have time. You'll ask me another time, I'll tell you. I have a great story about a friend of mine who thought he was a Levi and found out at a fairly advanced age that he was never a Levi. It was all a mistake. He found out, but other people maybe hadn't found out. He found out b'mikra, and it's entirely possible that had things played out differently, he never would have known. It was just a mistake, simply a mistake. And therefore, that affects two things. It affects the truma in the sense that even if the Kohen was tahor, he can't eat truma because even if Rabbi Katz could somehow become tahor, he still can't eat truma. Because he thinks he's a Kohen, but maybe he isn't. And we don't have the ability anymore to assume that the Misorah that we have about these things is accurate. So we can't rely on that for who a Kohen is. Also for a Levi. For a Levi, I told you I'm a Levi. I can't prove I'm a Levi. Now if you choose to give me Maaser Rishon and I eat it, there's no problem. Because even if I'm Tamei, I'm allowed to eat Maaser Rishon. Even if I'm not really a Levi, I'm allowed to eat Maaser Rishon. So if you want to give me your Maaser Rishon, you can. And by the way, I have a neighbor who does. When he also has some trees in his backyard, and he's always makbid to come over to our house and give me Maaser Rishon. He comes over every so often with a little bag. Maaser Rishon. He comes over with a little bag with a couple of, what has he got in his yard? He has, I think he has a pomegranate tree, and he has, I don't know, every so often he comes over with a little bag of fruits and says, here's Maaser Rishon. But here's the thing. He doesn't mind doing that because he has a couple of trees. Okay? If I would go to, you know, all the farmers in this country and, you know, start asking for Maaser Rishon, I could get quite wealth, and I'm allowed to sell it, right? And if I could prove I'm a Levi, I could get very wealthy. Because I could demand, at least from people who are willing to follow the halacha, I could demand Maaser Rishon from people. But here's the thing. Maaser Rishon, as I told you, is a monetary matter. Okay? in the laws of monetary matters, okay, if I have a dispute with someone, if I'm suing somebody for money, and it's not clear. Let's say I claim Riva owes me 100 shekels. And Riva claims she doesn't. Okay? And Riva claims she doesn't owe me the money. Or maybe there's some real question here, you know, whatever the story is. So if we can't figure out who's right, who wins this case, me or Riva, I'm claiming she owes me money, she's claiming she's not. The rule in halacha is hamotzi mechaveiro alav hari'aya. Whoever, can just close the door, it's a little noisy out there. Whoever wants to take money away from someone else, he has to prove it. So if I'm claiming Riva owes me money, it's my responsibility to prove she owes me the money. It's not her responsibility to prove she doesn't. Right? And therefore, I would lose. If I'm a Levi, okay? So if Abby's a farmer, right? She has this huge field. And I come to Abby and I say, look, I see you just separated Maaser Rishon. She says, yes, I did. I said, I'd like you to please give it to me. I'm a Levi. She could say to me, well, how do I know you're a Levi? I'll say, well, don't you trust me? She says, it's not that I don't trust you, but, you know, there's been mistakes and we don't really know for sure. I can't force her. So if she wants to be nice and give it to me, like my neighbor does, so she can. But if I would demand it from her, she has the right to say, look, as soon as someone comes along and proves they're a Levi, I will give him Maaser Rishon. But until that happens, I'm going to separate it out, and I'm going to leave it until some Levi comes and takes it. If someone can prove he's a Levi, then I'll give it to him. Until then, I don't have to give it to him. And if I don't have to give it to him, I can eat it also, because it has no Kedusha. Therefore, I'm sorry, I just have to finish, okay? So I'll take all questions afterwards. Therefore, Bizman Hazeh, sadly, there's only one of these matanot. We can't give Truma to the Kohen. Maaser Rishon, we can give to the Levi, but we don't have to. Truma Maaser, we can't give to the Kohen either. Maaser Sheni, we can't take to Yerushalayim and eat it there. There's only one of these things that we can actually give to the person it's supposed to go to. That's Maaser Ani. And Maaser Ani also, we don't actually usually give them, you know, pieces of apples and things like that. But as I'll explain to you in a second, no, that's Truma, that's not Maaser. There is a way to give Maaser Ani properly, and it's what should be done. So quickly, I will now explain to you what we do. Truma, we have to separate these things out, or else we can't eat. The food is tevel. Okay, when they harvest the fields in this country, everything they harvest becomes tevel. And you're not allowed to eat it until we separate out all these things, even though most of them can't be used for the purpose they need to be used for. And therefore, what do? Number one, we separate out truma. And the truma we separate out, though, is going to have to be left to rot or something like that. It can't be, sometimes it can be fed to animals that belong to a kohen. There's a way to do that. But we can't give truma to a kohen. Therefore, the truma gedola, that min haTorah, had no shear. It could be even the tiniest amount. I mean, the Rabbanan, it was supposed to be 1/40th, 1/50th, or 1/60th. But why did the rabbis make that shear?
Because
they wanted the Kohen to have something to live on. If it's not going to a Kohen anyway, the halacha is that you don't have to give that shear. You can give just the smallest amount. Maaser Rishon, I'm sorry, Trumat Maaser, is going to have to be, it's a tenth of a tenth. So basically, what's going to happen is a little more than 1% of the produce is going to have to be wasted. It's going to become truma, and no one's going to be allowed to eat it. So we have to take, I'll show you how we do this in a second, but we have to take 1% that's going to be truma maaser, and we have to take the truma gedola, which is a little more than 1%, the mashahu, and that part is going to have to be physically separated out, and that part is going to have to be left to rot. Since it's going to rot anyway, the poskim say that if you have some of the fruits or grains that are normally supposed to give good stuff to the kohen, but it's not going to a kohen anyway, so the poskim say that nowadays we're allowed to take, if you have some parts of the crops that are too small to sell or that are a little bit rotten or something like that, then they use that for the truma, but it has to be physically separated out from the rest. But that 1% is the only part that's going to be physically separated out. The maaser rishon, we're going to declare it as Maaser Rishon, but we're not going to do anything with it. We're going to declare it as Maaser Rishon, we're going to remove the Trumat Maaser from it, and then we're going to sell it with the rest of the stuff. Because if someone ever proves they're a levi, they'll get it. If not, we're just going to keep it. And since no one can prove they're a levi, right now we're just going to keep it. The maser sheni, what are we going to do with it? We can't take it to Yerushalayim. But what we can do is we can transfer the kedusha to money. And here also we have a leniency. Normally, when I redeem maser sheni, I'm supposed to redeem it for its full value plus a chomesh. But since today I'm not able to eat it and it's going to be wasted, there's a leniency that we rely on, that no matter how valuable the maser sheni is, we can redeem it onto one pruta. A pruta is very small. It's the value of 1/40th of a gram of silver. Okay, so it's a few pennies. We're going to transfer the value, or even if I have $1 million worth of maser sheni, bizman hazeh, we are allowed to redeem it on a pruta, which is a tiny amount of money. And then that pruta will then have to be saved until the end of the third year of Shemitah, and then it's going to have to be destroyed, but it's going to be only one tiny little coin. So I'm not going to physically separate the Maser Rishon, I'm not going to physically separate the Maser Sheni. Then the Maser Ani is going to have to go to a poor person. Okay, I am over time. I'm stopping now. I didn't finish this, so we're going to have to finish this next week. Next week, I'll show you practically how to do this, okay?